That was Lieutenant Rick Apperson of the Buckley Valley Salvation Army. Coming up next, my interview with MP Taylor Bacharach.
This is Taylor Bacharach. I'm the Member of Parliament for Skeena Buckley Valley, and I'm coming to you from the capital city, Ottawa.
Taylor, thanks so much for being with us today. You tabled a private members bill recently, Bill C-210, an act to lower the voting age to 16. Tell us a little bit about why you wanted to table this bill.
Yeah, so I was really pleased to be able to table this bill last Monday in the House of Commons, just before the House rose for the Christmas break. And this is a really exciting piece of legislation. It's an idea that's been around for quite a while, but it's really timely, and a lot of people are talking about it right now. And that's for a bunch of reasons. But maybe I'll start with why the Right to Vote at 16 Act. And the biggest reason in my mind is because the issues that we're talking about as a country, the issues that the federal government is making decisions on, and the issues we're talking about in the House of Commons right now are big issues that have real implications for today's young people. They're going to inherit the impacts of these decisions, whether it's on issues like the climate emergency and our response to it as a country, issues like housing affordability and the fact that young people today are looking at very difficult opportunities to buy a house in today's market, that housing has become so unaffordable. We're facing a major housing crisis. And whether we're looking at issues like economic inequality in general and issues like student debt, these are things that young people care about, and they have really profound implications for them as they go out into the world. So I feel, and many people feel, that young people should have a place at the table and they should have a voice on these issues that affect them so profoundly. And that is what the Right to Vote at 16 Act is about. There's a bunch of other important arguments that I'm happy to lay out. This is also a piece of legislation that's about strengthening our democracy. One of the most troubling trends we see in Canadian elections is that election after election, we see the lowest voter turnout among the youngest voters. So these are our folks kind of 18 to 24 years old, many of them voting for the first time. And each time we have a federal election, fewer and fewer of these folks come out to vote. There was a bit of a blip in 2015, an encouraging trend among those younger voters. But since then, we've seen it go down. And if you look over the decades, the trend is quite alarming. So the idea with the Right to Vote at 16 Act is that if we can help young people develop the voting habit while they're still in school, the idea is that those habits will stick with them through their lives. And if we pair it up with good civics education in high school, voter registration, and we get young folks voting at age 16, then we can turn around some of those disturbing trends when it comes to voter participation. And then the last reason, and then I'll let you ask me another question. The last reason is because it's their right. The Canadian Constitution says that every Canadian citizen can vote, and it's only in the Canada Elections Act where Parliament has chosen to set age 60 or age 18 as the voting age. It wasn't always that way. The voting age in Canada used to be 21, and it was lowered to age 18 back in 1970. So, you know, when we talk about the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, Section 1 of the Constitution lays out that the people's freedoms and rights should only be infringed upon if there's a very good justification for doing so in the interest of a free and democratic society. And I don't think the arguments against letting 16-year-olds vote are very strong ones. Essentially, some people say that 16-year-olds aren't mature enough to make those kinds of decisions. But there's plenty of research that shows that 16-year-olds can certainly make informed decisions. And I think we need to take a hard look at this, and that it would improve our democracy and give young people a voice at the table and create a stronger country if we were to lower the voting age.
Indeed. Old age is not synonymous with making sound, informed decisions. So I hear you there. Passing it down to 16-year-olds sounds like a good idea. But this isn't the first time that this has been discussed. It's been discussed many times over the last several decades. As you mentioned, there are also some, even NDP MPs, who have also had this conversation and tried to table private members' bills as well. Do you think that this has legs, though, as a private members' bill to actually become law? Young people usually go the other way. They usually vote more progressively. And so, obviously, this could favor parties like the NDP. So do you think that it has enough legs to actually make it through the House and become law with the other parties?
Well, there's a bunch of things happening right now that make this time a little bit different. First of all, there's also a bill that's been introduced in the Senate, and that bill is making its way forward, and it builds on a court case. And there's a number of young people who are taking the government to court over their constitutional right to vote. So this has created quite a bit of interest in this idea. Internationally, we've seen a number of countries lower their voting age to 16 over past years. So countries like Austria, Scotland, Wales, Argentina, most recently, the new government in Germany has promised to lower the voting age. And we're going to be watching that example closely. So there is, there are some examples to look to around the world. And there's been some research done based on those examples, places like Scotland that have, where young people have had the right to vote at 16 for a number of years. They've done research on what the impacts are. And in general, there's certainly no downside. They haven't been able to document any downside to lowering the voting age. And in several countries, they're starting to see real positive impacts along the lines of what I talked about earlier. So I think, this is an important conversation, and I'm hopeful that folks in other parties, you mentioned that, this has been brought forward in the House of Commons before. Interestingly, it's been brought forward by the Liberals. Mark Holland, who's currently the government House leader, brought forward a private member's bill to lower the voting age back, I believe it was about 15 years ago. Elizabeth May from the Green Party has tabled this bill in the House. My colleague Don Davies with the NDP, he tabled this bill a number of times in recent years. And the first time it was tabled was by a woman named Bev Desjarlais, who's a member of parliament from Northern Manitoba. So lots of interest in this over the years. I'm really looking forward to reaching out to my colleagues across the aisle, having this conversation. This shouldn't be a partisan conversation. This is about improving our democracy and hopefully bringing folks on board and building the kind of support we need to get this through the House.
As I understand it, the House is taking a break for the holidays, for the Christmas season. What is your hope in seeing this bill move forward? When could we actually expect this to go through the next few readings?
Yeah, so it takes a few months for my spot to come up in the order of precedence. But, we're hopeful that sometime spring or summer, it'll come forward for some debate in the House of Commons. And the way it works, private members' bills, they come forward for 1 hour of debate. The sponsor of the bill and one representative from each of the other recognized parties gets to speak to it. And then it drops down to the bottom of the order again and makes its way back up. And so it comes forward for its second hour of debate and a vote at second reading. So those steps take some time. Of course, if it's successful after second reading, it goes off to committee where it's studied and amended and then comes back to the House and then goes off to the Senate. And then gets passed into law if it makes it that far. So that's certainly the hope. There's been a lot of interest in this bill, Dan. I don't know if you've seen on social media, but it generates a lot of responses from people. People seem to have a gut reaction, whether positive or negative. One thing I'm really looking forward to doing is getting out, hopefully to visit some high schools and talk to young people about this bill and what it's trying to achieve and getting their input.
No doubt. Great. Well, we'll stay in touch on that file, of course. This is a great bill, and I'm curious to see how it ends up. What else have you been working on this past year? Taylor, we're kind of reaching the end of the year, on our way into 2022. We're still in the midst of a global pandemic. What are some of the other things that you've been trying to tackle during your time this past year in the House?
For sure. Well, it's been a busy year, and looking back on the past year, there's obviously it's been a challenging one for a lot of folks. In addition to the pandemic response, and the pandemic continues to really shape a lot of our work in the House of Commons and be, you know, one of the most challenging dynamics in our country and certainly in the Northwest. But in addition to that, I've been doing a bunch of other work on a number of issues. Like I told you earlier, I was really honored to be reappointed as the NDP's transport critic. So I'm going to be working on a bunch of transport related stuff. A couple of those things. One, I'm hoping to continue to work on the study we got going in Parliament on rail safety. This is an issue that's of concern to a lot of folks in the Northwest. As well, you know, with Greyhound gone, there's a real challenge around intercity bus service across Canada. We used to have affordable, safe, convenient bus service that linked up every single part of the country almost. And now that's gone and it hasn't been replaced by anything. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation with folks across the country. There's a petition going on right now in the House that I'm pleased to sponsor that urges the federal government to come up with a strategy for a public bus service that connects Canadians. So we're going to be working on that as well. And of course, back in October, I had the opportunity to travel down to Washington. I think you and I spoke when I was down there and talking to the Alaskan legislators about our wild salmon and steelhead and, you know, what we can do working together to ensure that, you know, salmon stocks are around for future generations. Things are looking pretty bleak. So I'm looking forward to engaging with people up and down the river, up and down the Skeena and up and down our coast, talking about how we can work together, how we can come together around this vision of restoring abundance and diversity in our wild salmon stocks. And that's such an important conversation in our region, as you very well know. So those are a few things, but you know, I was looking back at the year and man, between like the extreme weather events that we had, the flooding and the fires in British Columbia, you know, you look at obviously at the pandemic now staring down the road at the fifth wave with the Omicron variant. It has been a bit of a bleak year on many fronts. And, you know, I certainly hope that we've got better news on the horizon in 2022. Looking back at the year, I mentioned earlier the some of the challenging events, the extreme weather events, the flooding and the fires. One of the other things that really shook our country was the discovery back in the summer of the unmarked burial sites near Kamloops, and you know, really created a time of reckoning for Canadians. You know, I think there was some good that came out of that. Obviously, there's a huge amount of work that needs to be done. And looking at the 94 calls to action from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, Parliament was able to move some of those forward. Certainly, the more symbolic ones, unfortunately, and there's a lot of work to do to get the really substantive changes in place. So that's work that's very important for our region. Roughly a third of the people living in Northwest BC are Indigenous, and residential schools have had a profound intergenerational impact on families in our region. So I'm looking forward to pushing for the implementation of all of the rest of those calls to action, especially, you know, some of the really important ones around the justice system and the education system. And hopefully in 2022, we're going to see some marked progress on that front. And I'm certainly going to push hard.
Taylor, just one other thing I want to touch upon. What comes to mind when we think about the rail line here, the passenger train, the Via Rail train? You spoke about it more in the sense of safety in terms of the rail traffic, but in terms of the realm of public transportation, we have a long history of the rail line being in this area right across the north, and the Via Rail being a part of that, passenger transportation on the rail line being a part of that. But in recent years, it's fallen by the wayside. What's your plan and what's your hope to see improvements along the rail line in terms of passenger transportation and public transportation like the Via Rail?
Yeah, every time I talk about bus transportation, Dan, people bring up rail passenger transportation. And there's just such a desire out there to see Canada invest properly in its rail system and in passenger rail. It's definitely, it would take a lot of work. The current situation when it comes to our rail line really sees freight trains prioritized. And unfortunately, our passenger service via rail in the Northwest has really become more of a tourist opportunity. It doesn't operate with the kind of reliability and consistency that you would need for it to be a really viable everyday transportation option. So I absolutely believe that the federal government should get on board with passenger rail and you know, come together around a vision for building infrastructure and getting trains running, connecting Canadian cities again. It's going to take a big push. There are parts of the country where there is more potential, and you know, the looking at the kind of Toronto to Quebec City corridor, where you've got really high population densities, and Via Rail actually does the vast majority of its passenger business along that corridor. And I've taken the train just recently from Ottawa to Montreal, and it's certainly a well-used service. Now, the federal government has committed to building high-frequency rail using abandoned train tracks and some existing lines along that corridor, and having trains that run at a bit faster speeds and run more frequently to really, you know, get people onto the train and using it as a commuter option along that dense corridor. So when we look across the country and we look at opportunities for passenger rail, that's really the low-hanging fruit. But I would love to see the government, you know, there are other countries in the world that are way ahead of us when it comes to passenger rail. You know, countries looking at high-speed trains that go hundreds of kilometers an hour. Here in Canada, we're way behind the times. So I wish there was a bit more of a visionary approach. I'm really looking forward to being out there on the road again in the Northwest and visiting communities. But for right now, I hope everyone in the region, whether you're in Kitimat or Terrace or Atlin or Bella Bella, up and down our coast and up and down our rivers, I hope everyone has a safe holiday season and a Merry Christmas.
All right, great. MP Taylor Bacharach, thanks so much for checking in and giving us a bit of a roundup of the past year. And we look forward to connecting in the new year and see what lays ahead.
Thanks, Dan. Always great to talk to you. Hope you and your family have a great holiday. And we'll
same
talk
to you. Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at skeenastrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.